Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is Bonnie Kay from the Straight Wives Talk Show, the hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-hostess Misty Hall and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So, good evening, Misty. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Good evening, Bonnie. How are you tonight?
I'm doing good. It's a little cooler here tonight. We had the worst rainstorm that I can remember in years.
Oh, really?
Overnight and through today.
We've had quite the storm today as well. Thunderstorm, lightning, yeah, lots of storms.
Yeah, here too. So, anyway, hopefully weather will be better, and hopefully everybody's surviving it well. At least it cooled it off a little bit. So I'm able to talk tonight without my air conditioner booming away in the background, which I know people are always grateful for when they listen to this show. So, Misty, I know that your seminar is coming up next week. I'm so excited about it. So I thought you could spend a few minutes and talk about that first.
Absolutely, next weekend. Wow, it's going to be on grief. It's going to be the main topic. As I've discussed many times before, grief is one of the important aspects for any straight wife to learn about, especially in the beginning. Grief is undoubtedly an understatement, I guess you could say, somewhat to what you feel when you discover that your husband is gay. You go through all the stages. And just by knowing the stages, knowing what to expect, knowing what's normal, what's not normal, can be very valuable information in your healing process and your journey. So that's what I'm going to do. You know, it's my gift to straight wives next Saturday, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm going to give a talk, approximately 1 hour. It's going to be over the phone, which is always really nice to get together with women over the phone. And you can call from the comforts of your home, the comforts of a private area with your cell phone, wherever it is you need to call. And you'll call into a general number. Once you call into that number, you'll be given a PIN code to press in, and you'll be into the conference, which is a teleseminar type conference, and at that point in time, I'll talk for approximately an hour about grief, and I'll answer a few questions at the end. It'll be very informative. It will hopefully let you connect with other women from around the country, sometimes people from Canada and overseas join us, so we'll wait and see who all does join us. It's quite refreshing to hear other people's story and to realize that you're not the only one going through this. So the call itself, in and of itself, is quite healing just to hear that there are other straight wives out there going. I've got several requests everywhere from people that have gone through divorce for approximately a year or two, people that just found out within the last month. So there's a whole gamut. There's all kinds of different women that will be participating. So if you want a spot, please email me. And my email address is MistyLynnHall@AOL.com. And that's MistyLynnHall@AOL.com. And make sure that you get a confirmation. If you don't, email me again. Because once I get the email, within 24 hours, you should have a confirmation. And it'll be very interesting, very informative. And once again, that's 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time next Saturday.
How's it filling up, Misty?
It's filling up pretty fast. Of course, you know, there's always some that usually can't make it, so I'll usually take a few over. So, so far, so good. There's several joining us. And it's women that I haven't had in the past, so that's good. I'll be getting to meet new women, which is always wonderful. Not wonderful for what they've gone through, but it's wonderful to connect with those women to let them know they're not alone. So it's going to be very interesting. I suspect we'll have a fairly full house, which would be really good, just because when you come together with the same intention, it seems like healing takes place anyway. So that's one of the importance of the seminars. I think it's so wonderful, and I like to be able to allow straight wives to experience it.
I think just the fact that women can connect is a healing experience. You know, so often, I mean, I get letters every day, but, I mean, certainly this happens with other women, too. You know, I get letters every day because people go to my website and they write to me saying, thank God I found your website. thank God that, you know, I know that I'm not alone anymore. I think part of the, you know, real problem in being a straight wife is not only all you have to go through, but just the feelings of isolation and that you're the only one who's going through this. And also the grieving that you have to go through, not quite understanding it. And, you know, I work with some really, you know, sad situations, you know, every day. And no matter how you look at it, whether, you know, and it's always interesting to me, the women who have really nice husbands, who are good husbands, have the hardest time, you know, accepting that their marriage is over versus women who live in marriages that are really bad, who, you know, it's a relief, you know, that the marriage is over. But no matter which way you feel, it's still devastating because till you get to that point, all the things that have happened. And, you know, for women who have been in good marriages, it's always harder for them to end the marriage because they can't understand it. You know, this is just so escaping from all of us. You know, you don't understand how you marry someone, how you love someone, how you think you have a marriage with someone, how you build a family together, you have children together, and then one day he turns around and says, honey, I'm gay. And, you know, for those who are honest enough about it to say it. But usually guys who have a good conscience will do that because, you know, they don't want their wives to suffer. And, you know, they want to think about being honest with her, which I strongly encourage with every man I work with. You can't help being gay, but you can help, you know, being honest about it. But when these wives hear it, and the ones who have these good husbands, and there are many of them, you know, they're just so thrown because they weren't unhappy in their marriages, and now all of a sudden it's going to be over. And that's so hard to mourn. That's, don't you think that's harder than someone who has a bad marriage, Misty?
Yeah, I see so many different, you know, you always think there's nothing new to discover, but there's always new things to discover, especially with the women we work with. And to back up just a little bit, there's always the common threads that run through all the marriages. You know, it's so interesting in how many similarities they are. It's just unbelievable sometimes. But I do have to agree that oftentimes the women and men that have, quote, a good marriage, meaning they get along well, there's not abuse going on in the relationship, they've really carved out a nice life together. Those women, yes, when they get the discovery, they seem to be more devastated because it's hard to let go of something that felt so right, I guess, so to speak. Now, I will say oftentimes, once when that person does let go and allow themselves to heal, then they get into another relationship, they realize that there were some things that maybe were just not right with their relationship with their gay husband. You know, it's just those little things that just come about that it's hard to explain. It's just things that are there. So I find that interesting a lot as well, how that usually happens.
I agree. And, you know, women always tell me that no matter how happy they were in their marriages, once they meet someone who's straight, they can certainly see the differences. But, you know, that could take a long time till they're ready to meet someone else. But I think the difficulty with dealing with a good marriage ending, you know, and finding out that your husband is gay versus, you know, the abusive ones is the fact that you still love your husband so much and you can't understand how this marriage is ending. And unlike death, where grief is really, you know, you can deal with grief and it's final. You can mourn the situation and then you move on after a certain amount of time. This makes it so much more difficult to move on because the person's still alive and is still a part of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really is a difficult way to go. I really do. My heart goes out to women who are in this situation. You know, they have a much harder time accepting it than women who have been in marriages that are really detrimental.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully your grief workshop will hit all of those, correct?
So, I hope so. That's
all of those aspects of marriage.
Mm-hmm. We'll go through, you know, I'm planning on covering a broad stages of grief, and hopefully we'll hit every topic. And, you know, I think everyone will find something helpful out of the
mm-hmm. So if any of you have any questions or you'd like to make any comments tonight, please feel free to call us at area code 646-716-4893. I'll repeat the number for you, area code 646 716-4893. And I just wanted to mention, Misty, how impressed I was with our guest last week, Angelo Pizzotti. Wasn't he wonderful?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's good to have that type of information on this show. I think it's very important for us to be able to provide that to Straight Wives. It was phenomenal.
I thought he was phenomenal, and I asked Angelo if he could join us again in a couple of months. He said he would be delighted to. I really wanted to have a chance to read his book first, and I did receive this book, and it's called Straight Acting, Gay Men, Masculinity, and Finding True Love. Now, Angelo is a gay therapist, and he's never been involved in a straight marriage himself. I mean, he's dealt with a lot of men who have been. But, you know, he never had that desire or need. You know, he always knew who he was, and he wasn't confused. So, you know, that wasn't really an issue for him. But the book to me is really interesting, and it really talks a lot about things that we know about, but I think he puts it so well. So I just wanted to read a page or two. And, you know, if you're interested in buying Angelo's book, you can. It's available on Amazon. And it's a really great investment for the $14. You really get a lot of bang out of this book as far as understanding, you know, how gay people feel. Once again, he's not writing this, you know, geared towards gay married men, but just gay people in general, gay men in general. And it says, you know, he's talking about people haven't stopped identifying as gay just because more gays are accepted and integrated into society. Quite the contrary, we are still fighting for equal rights, not to mention the words fag, faggot, and gay, as well as phrases like that's so gay, are commonly used today to refer to anything or anyone that's lame, stupid, freakish, inferior, or weak, unworthy of respect. They're derogatory words that demonstrate just how much gays are reviled in our culture. No wonder we want to normalize ourselves and aren't comfortable being associated with anything too gay. Many people, gay people, don't want to complicate things by putting it in their face. This would bring more burdens into themselves than they already have with the gay label itself. Gay is over. I'm gay, but I'm just like you. And repair being gay are nice ideas. But I have a newsflash. We're gay, and that's a unique and beautiful thing to celebrate. Gay makes us quite unlike everyone else. If gay was over, we would be just the same as everyone else. Or if gay wasn't considered a choice, then we wouldn't still be the targets of blame. We wouldn't need to understate ourselves, obscure our gayness, or normalize to feel more comfortable. Shame is not intrinsic to being a gay person. It comes from a homophobic culture. People aren't bad, but a bad atmosphere can be infective. Internalizing continuous anti-gay prejudice and discrimination can breed angry anti-gay sentiment in heterosexuals and a sense of inadequacy, shame, and corroded self-esteem in gay people. In the face of gay liberation, the assaults of conservative backlash have brought our unacceptability, inferiority, and consequently our unconscious shame to a fuller consciousness. The more they see, the more they judge us. It's unbearable. The shame and pain of social rejection makes some gay men unwilling to stick out too much by appearing less masculine. We can be careful not to flaunt it. The need for such discretion can be carried into adulthood from childhood. Juan told me that he learned young that he better hide it. He said, one day I remember watching TV with my mother and a gay character came on. She said, I'd rather have a dead son than a gay son. By conforming, we're screaming out that we just want to be seen and treated as normal. We don't really wish to erase being gay, a core part of ourselves, our sexual identity. It's who we are, gay persons, as well as mainstream American medical and mental health professionals, overwhelmingly say that being gay is not a choice. Scientific research is pointing to a confirming biological cause. No one wants to hide, convert, or repair their essence of who they are. In fact, that's damaging. What gay persons really want to change is all the hardship that comes with being gay. We want the pain that comes from the stigma to be taken away so we suffer less, living better lives. And, you know, that was just a little bit of what he wrote. But I thought, you know, it's really interesting. He wrote a lot of interesting concepts here that you don't think about too much, you know, because we're straight. But when you're growing up gay and the world is telling you that there's something devious, horrible, decadent about who you are, that must really play into the self-esteem of gay people, wouldn't you think so?
I would absolutely think so. That would damage a lot of things about how someone felt about themselves. You know, just hearing the comments just throughout, you know, family, messages you get from the media, all sorts of places. Just messages can be found anywhere. So I can't imagine, you know, what it was. You know, I know what it was 10, 15 years ago. I can't imagine what it was 20 years ago, 30 years ago, you know, all this stuff that the comments and stuff, they're just, it's horrible. And I can't imagine what that would do to anyone.
I know. I mean, I kind of agree with him. In fact, I do agree with Angela that even though things have gotten better and things have changed to some extent, there's still so much homophobia out there. And, you know, the messages haven't changed in a lot of quarters. I live in a big city, so, you know, it's more liberal. You know, people can feel a little more comfortable coming, you know, out. But in plenty of places in this country, you know, it's still not an acceptable thing.
It's not. And being, I'm a therapist, and being a therapist, I have, you know, I have many professional acquaintances. And, you know, in this day and time, several of those do believe that homosexuality is a choice, which I think can be somewhat really scary, especially if someone gay went to a therapist such as that, or a straight wife went to a therapist such as that.
I know. And see, that's the whole thing that I just don't understand. Excuse me. People say that homosexuality is a choice. You know, I still hear that every day. And even in our big cities where people are more educated, I still hear it almost every day. You know, it's always an argument I have to have with people. And I just don't understand this, because if people could choose their sexuality, why would they choose to be gay? This is what I don't understand.
You know, I signed up for this lesson the hard way. I was one of those people that many years ago, I grew up thinking it was a choice. And, you know, I signed up for the lesson the hard way. I married someone that was gay. And it was, you know, I don't deny it was a very abusive relationship, but that wasn't necessarily connected to him being gay. But what I did learn was, you know, it was a battle I think he fought every day. So why would anyone choose that, to bring such hardship onto themselves, you know, potentially lose their family? I signed up for the lesson the hard way. And I realize that people, you know, who would make that choice? And I don't think this is, and one thing, I don't think it's necessarily just Christians that think, you know, not all Christians certainly do not think this. I'm trying to look at it in terms of, some people think, well, it's just because of religious background. Not necessarily. Many of the therapists that I know are not religious whatsoever and still believe that it's a choice. So you find it in all different types of people with all types of different beliefs. So I think
just don't get what's the incentive to choose it. I mean, if you can be straight, why wouldn't you want to be straight? If you could be part of mainstream society, if you can have the good things in life, why would you obsess yourself trying to be something that you're not? I just don't get it. Are they saying that people are bisexual?
No, they're saying, one of the therapists that I know, you know, we sort of had a heated discussion about it, and that therapist said, well, they believed it was some type of sexual trauma, the reason that people are gay, that people are not necessarily gay, that it is a choice, and they've chosen to become gay, which, I tried to explain to the therapist, I don't know anyone that would choose to become gay, not with all the hardships, not with all the bullying, not with all the comments, you know. And a lot of these comments from the gay men I know, I mean, they start in grade school sometimes, you know, the comments, other kids picking on these kids. So, I mean, you know what, I just, don't understand how anyone that is educated could say that it's a choice, but it is. It's out there. There's mean professionals out there. So be wary of who you do choose, you know, in terms of for professional help, because there's many therapists out there that, well, there, as you know, Bonnie, there's many therapists out there that still practice reparative therapy. So,
you know, I'm just never going to get it. There's too many things in life I don't get, and I don't know if it will ever change in my lifetime. Well, not in my lifetime, in anybody's lifetime, not certainly not in mine. But, you know, as sympathetic as I am, and I am, you know, I'm really, my heart goes out to any gay person who has to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
In my own mind, I really separate that from gay men who have to get married and knowingly marry women, you know, knowing that they're gay or knowing that there's issues and not discussing them first with the woman who they, you know, who they love.
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
they get into a marriage, and then on top of it all, you know, they're unhappy, so they have to take that unhappiness out on their wives and devastate those women's lives.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, you know, this came up the week before when we had Maggie on our show, and, you know, we were talking about Craigslist. And Maggie did that little experiment where she put an ad in Craigslist. And the next day when I spoke to her, she just, like, amazed me. You know, Maggie's in the middle of the South where, you know, I'm not in a, you know, it's not like in a big town like New York or Los Angeles. And, you know, within moments and overnight, she had dozens and dozens and dozens of responses to her ad that she was looking for. You know, she set herself up as a gay married man. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to look a little more into this. And one of our listeners, Debbie, was kind enough in her area in Texas. Debbie started doing some research also, and she started, you know, looking into Craigslist. And she sent me some ads from the, you know, from that area in Texas, and it was just, like, really amazing to me. And then I looked in Philadelphia in my own Craigslist, and that was amazing to me also. Like, some of the ads were just unbelievable. In fact, I'm writing about them in my newsletter. That'll be out in the next day or two. But they were all horrible, you know, and some of them were just worse than the next. Of course, there was no such thing as a good ad for, you know, married gay male, as far as I'm concerned. But a few things really did bother me. Like, for instance, there was this one ad, and this one came from Texas, and it says, I've been searching for a friend for some time, but have yet to meet anyone. I am 48 years old, 6'2", and 220 pounds, have been told I'm decent looking. I have no experience with another man, but I want to try everything with the right person. I have a great job and family, so discretion is a must. I prefer that you not have any experience either and be married. So listen to this next line. I would like it if our wives knew we were friends, and that would make getting together easier. Anyway, let me know about you and what you're looking for. So now we have to entangle the wives into this friendship. You know, it's not bad enough that they're, you know, he's looking for somebody to have an affair. He wants the wives to, you know, be okay with this. So I thought that was pretty bad. I had one here that I thought was really bad also. This guy says, now this is from my area where I live, in Philadelphia. It says, 55-year-old married white gay man looking for a married man to orally service with no reciprocation. Men with a hairy chest and legs are a plus. Enjoy a verbal man that could turn into a regular. Can host on occasion, and then in parentheses, wife travels for job, but required utmost discretion, spend stats, and availability. So I said, what caught my eye with this ad was a complete and utter disregard for the violation of the family house while his wife's away on a business trip. You know, I just don't get that. You know, here he's inviting men into his house to have an affair while his wife is traveling. What do you think of that?
Well, I can speak from experience. My ex-husband did bring men into the marital home that I found out, which was rather devastating. You know, there's something I considered marriage sacred. I considered the marital home sacred, meaning, you know, there should not be any affairs going on. So not only was he having affairs, he did bring men into the home because I was having to travel a lot. I had a family member that had been really sick, and actually it was my father. He had been in a near-fatal car wreck, so I had to travel to where I was from in eastern Kentucky to help take care of my dad. It was very touch and go, being that he was nearly killed in the accident. And at that point in time, he actually moved the lover into the marital home. And it's very devastating.
It's really sickening.
It's insult to injury, I guess you could say. It just adds another layer of complication.
So while I was, you know, really researching for Craig's list, Maggie, you know, did send me a really interesting news article that I'll share with you. She just sent me this a couple days yesterday or the day before. And this was from the Indy Star, which I had missed hearing this story, but I thought it was really interesting. Hold on one second. Let me just pull this article up. Okay. I'm waiting for the Indy Star, and it's about State Representative Philip Hinkle, H-I-N-K-L-E. And here it's on IndyStar.com. Now it's in the newspaper here, top story. Top headline, let me just make sure it's coming up all right. And it says, email rendezvous entangles state senator Hinkle. It says, email shared with the Indianapolis Star suggests that State Representative Philip Hinkle, responding to a local posting on Craigslist, offered a young man $80 plus tip to spend time with him Saturday night at the JW Marriott Hotel. The email, sent from Hinkle's publicly listed personnel address, asked the young man for a couple of hours of your time tonight and offer him cash up front with a tip of $50 to $60 for a really good time. The email exchange is in response to the Craigslist posting in which the young man, who lists his age as 20 in the ad but says he is 18 years old, says, I need a sugar daddy. The young man told the Star that they met, that he tried to leave after the man told him he was a state lawmaker. He said the lawmaker at first told him he could not leave, grabbed him in the rear, exposed himself to the young man, and later gave him an iPad, BlackBerry cell phone, and $100 cash to keep quiet. When contacted by the Star about the email, Hinkle, a Republican who represents portions of Pike and Wayne townships, did not contest the emails but said, I am aware of a shakedown taking place. Asked what he meant by shakedown, Hinkle would not elaborate. He directed further questions to his attorney. Hinkle's lawyer, defense attorney Peter Nugent, said he was unable to say what Hinkle meant by shakedown. Nugent said he is investigating the situation but does not know what happened Saturday night. Nugent said he has not filed a police report and does not yet know whether he will. Asked whether he had seen the emails in the Craigslist posting, Nugent said, oh, I've seen some emails, but not all of them. He would not be more specific. We're trying to get to the bottom of everything involved, Nugent said. Wednesday, Nugent faxed his official statement. Representative Hinkle is aware of the inquiries by the Indianapolis Star, and we are investigating the matter at this time. We request that everyone respect the privacy of the family at this time. Hinkle, 64, who lists his occupation as coordinator for community partnerships for Wayne Township Schools on the Indiana House website, has been a state lawmaker since 2000. He is best known in the State House for his interest in local government issues. On the website, he also notes that he was a co-author of a bill created the In God We Trust license plate. The young man, Cameron Gibson, told the Star he posted the Craigslist ad In the casual encounter section under male for male, M for M, which is shorthand for men for men, he used his adopted sister's email address. Gibson said that he and the man met briefly but did not have sex. He told the sister, Megan Gibson, flatly denied any shakedown. I wasn't shaking him down at all, said Cameron Gibson. Megan Gibson said she contacted the star because she thought Hinkle's actions were creepy and giving a stature that his actions should be made public. Megan Gibson also provided the email exchange, which she forwarded to the star. She also allowed a reporter to inspect the emails which she had kept on her smartphone. The phone contained not only the email exchange, but a call log that showed phone calls from numbers that matched both Hinkle's cell phone and home phone. The Craigslist ad was posted at 7:37 a.m. Saturday. The ad shows two pictures of Cameron Gibson, shirtless with pants pulled below at the top of his underwear. The ad text features one written line, "Email me and I'll tell you everything you need to know." 47 minutes later, he received a response from phinkle46@comcast.net with the email signature sent from Phil's iPad. "Cannot be a long time, sugar daddy," the email reads, "but can for tonight. Would you be interested in keeping me company for a while tonight?" The email offers to make it worth your while in cash and offers a personal description. "I am an in-shape, married professional, 5'8", fit 170 pounds, and love getting and staying naked." 15 minutes later, Cameron Gibson replied, "Yes, I can." He also sent along his phone number. What followed was the email exchange between phinkle46 and Cameron Gibson. One email from Hinkle's account asks, "What will make you happy for giving me a couple hours of your time tonight?" Gibson says, "What can you give me?" Hinkle says, "How about $80 for services rendered and if I satisfied a really healthy tip? Will that make it worthwhile?" The two agreed on the price and discussed logistics. An email sent at 9:44 a.m., also with a signature sent from Phil's iPad and sent from Hinkle's personal account, lays clear the parameters for the tip. "Final for the record, for a really good time, you could get another $50-$60. That sound good?" Later, about 5 p.m., phinkle46 offered to pick up the young man at his West Side home and drive him to the JW Marriott Hotel. The final emails from phinkle came from a BlackBerry. One such email suggests, "If you want to consider spending night, you might tell your sister so she won't worry. Would have you back before 11 tomorrow. No extra cash, just free breakfast and maybe late night snack." Gibson responds only with his address. At 8:45 p.m., he receives one final email from phinkle saying, "I am here in parking lot between building 1 and 2. You hear?" The email exchange contains no mention of sex acts. Brad Banks, supervisor for the D-Felony Division at the Marion County Prosecutor's Office, explained, without being provided details of the emails, that prostitution in the state of Indiana is defined as an agreement between two parties to have sex in exchange for money, and that agreement must be about both sex and money. Cameron Gibson provided the following account of what happened after that final email. He said Hinkle picked up him up in a white car. His suit jacket was hanging in the back seat. When they arrived at the hotel, Gibson said that he was given the room key and told to go to the hotel. They couldn't go in together, Gibson was told. About 15 minutes later, Hinkle arrived in the room, changed into a towel, and then during small talk, informed Gibson he was a lawmaker. Gibson said the man showed him an identification card. The ID, Gibson said, gave a name, Philip Hinkle. "My eyes got so big," Gibson told the star, "I didn't really know what to say, so I didn't say anything. It was just a shock." Gibson said he had posted on Craigslist before, but had never met up with someone. Knowing he was in a bedroom with a politician, Gibson said he got cold feet. "Yeah, I don't want to do this," Gibson told Hinkle. He said Hinkle's response was, "You need to do this because I came and got you, and I'm not taking you back until we do what we need to do." Gibson excused himself to the bathroom. There he called his sister, Megan. She said she would come and get him immediately. When Gibson came out, he said Hinkle told him he couldn't leave. Gibson called his sister again. This time, Macon told him to put her on speakerphone. I started cussing him, Macon told the star. She also threatened to call the police and the local media. He said, I'll give you whatever, Macon said. But when they hung up, Cameron Gibson and Hinkle said Hinkle grabbed him by the right arm just below the shoulder. Gibson said it was then that Hinkle grabbed him in the rear, dropped his towel, and sat down on the bed naked. When Megan Gibson arrived to pick up her brother, she again threatened to call the police and the local media. Cameron and Megan Gibson said Hinkle offered them his iPad, a BlackBerry, and $100 in cash. Catherine Gibson walked past his sister and out of the room as she continued to yell at Hinkle. She was still going off, Cameron Gibson said, and I was like, okay, I think that's enough. I think he gets it. Megan Gibson said on the drive back, she began receiving a series of calls on the BlackBerry, including one from a woman who said she was Hinkle's wife. I was like, your husband's gay, Megan said. And then she was like, you have the wrong person. Megan read her the email address, phinkle46. The line went silent. Just for a couple seconds, Megan Gibson said, and the first thing she said was, please don't call the police. Phone messages left with Hinkle's wife late Thursday were not returned. Megan Gibson says she began receiving a series of calls from various family members, including from Hinkle's son-in-law, demanding that his wife see proof of the emails. Megan Gibson dropped off her brother, then returned to the JW Marriott, where she showed Hinkle's daughters the emails. Megan Gibson was on her way back, and she received another call from Hinkle's wife. The first thing she said was like, okay, we'll give you $10,000 not to say anything, said Megan Gibson, who said she was now becoming scared. I was like, okay, and I hung up the phone. She soon got another call from the Marriott Hotel. It was Hinkle. Megan Gibson told Hinkle that she had informed his wife and family he was gay. Megan Gibson said Hinkle's response was, you just ruined me. And that was the article.
Wow.
That's pretty scary, right?
Yeah, I had read a brief article about it. I had not read that article. Wow.
Yeah, I was just, like I say, floored when I read that. And I just thought it was timely, you know, because I'm writing about Craigslist this month for the newsletter. And, you know, I will mention Mr. Hinkle. But, you know, it's just amazing to me that here's a state representative is answering ads on Craigslist for men. I mean, like, how far does this go? It's really scary, isn't it?
It is, and I think sometimes, you know, I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm going to. Sometimes I think politicians feel like they're above the law or above getting caught, and they're not. They can get caught, you know, and my heart really goes out to his family because I know what it's like being on that side, you know. And it's, wow, what an amazing
For women who are still on the fence or not convinced about their husbands, you must go to Craigslist. It is a world of education. If nothing else, you know, I very strongly advocate you going on there. And who knows, you could very likely find your husband on there. And if you're suspicious and your husband's traveling, definitely look up the city where he's going, because I found a lot of those out-of-town married men kinds of ads. And some of these ads, I don't know if you've ever, have you ever looked at them, Misty?
I have not.
Oh, well, you need to. It's really, like I say, an education. But some of these ads have actual pictures of, you know, the husband's, you know, penis standing up straight and erect. So I thought, you know, a woman should know. Well, hopefully she can remember what it used to look like. And, you know, she could take a look at the pictures that way. I know one of our members found her husband on Craigslist that way, and she was totally devastated. You know, there's no face. And I was thinking to myself, can you imagine, like, if this was, like, a regular dating site, like Match.com or eHarmony? You know, they certainly don't take pictures of your private parts. They want your face only, right?
As far as I know, only, yeah. Except for some of the sites, you know, like my friend that signed up for the Grindr thing for me, you know, those people were sending very, very naked pictures of themselves. And
that was a gay, right? So that was gay.
I think so. I think it's mostly gay. I think so. I'm not that familiar with it, but I just know he had so many hits, and he took it off because he's getting way too many hits. They're just bombing my phone. So he took it off. It was so interesting. He forwarded some of them to me, and it was very explicit photos.
Yeah, I mean, this is a whole world that I was really unfamiliar with, even though I talk about it a lot because I hear from our other women. But, boy, when you go to Craigslist, and I give directions in this upcoming newsletter, which will be out in the next day or two. But, you know, you just go to www.craigslist.com, and, like, the first thing you see there are, you know, what your choices are. You go to personal ads. And then, like, the fifth choice down is, you know, men seeking men. And then when I went into there, I typed married men, and all of those ads, you know, populated right away. Anything that had to do with married men. So that was really interesting. And, of course, I was looking locally, so I saw that these are all in the neighborhoods where I live, or 10 or 20 minutes away from me. And I said to myself that this is so prevalent. But, you know, you take a look at this guy like Hinkle, and you think, how do you take a chance like this when you're an elected official?
I mean,
that to me is truly amazing, to go to a paper like Craigslist and use your real name and a similar email address. And to, I mean, I'm not quite sure what that kind of thinking is, where you think you're above the law and you just think that you can never get caught. What would you call that, Misty?
I would call that not being very smart is what I would call that. You know, I mean, not using your brain. You know, to think how, not only what danger you're putting, you know, let's pretend he wasn't even married, okay? Not only are you putting yourself in danger just by meeting someone and hooking up with someone for some type of fun, however it is you define fun, and not even knowing that person whatsoever, you know, because there was a Craigslist killer app, which it was a male killing females, you know, but, you know, you don't know what kind of unsavory people you're going to meet. So I think that's could be very dangerous. And second of all, when you have a family, wow, really, how's this going to devastate your family?
I know.
I don't understand it.
I don't. I mean, you know, I just can't understand being so open. I mean, I can understand if you want to try to be discreet. I mean, I'm not condoning it. I'm just saying I understand that better. But how do you put yourself right out there in front on something like Craigslist, and then show somebody you're a lawmaker? If anything, you would think he would really want to, you know, hide that, right?
You would think so, especially with the family, career at stake. I mean, everything at stake. I don't understand.
I know. These guys have no regard at all. Well, I'm going to continue learning on Craigslist. I said there has to be a way for us to alert men that we know what they're doing. I'm going to have to figure something out. That's one of my goals for this year, Misty. Try to get these men to know that, you know, they can't do this without feeling that there's going to be some consequence. So we have a little committee on the side working on that one. Anyway, I also want to bring up, I saw a very interesting article that I thought that a lot of our women can relate to, even though it's not necessarily, you know, of course, geared towards us. But this was an article a few weeks ago, and it's called "My Husband Came Back, Now What?" And, you know, sometimes husbands and wives, you know, when they break up, things happen, and then somehow the guy's back at the door. And I just want to read this article. It says, there comes a point for every world traveler, however adventurous, when you think you wake up in your hut or tent and think, gosh, I would love to make waffles. Then you catalog all the stuff you'll need to put off waffles, the iron, the mix, the whisk, the plate, the grade B maple syrup, and then you look down at your pathetic kit of eye drops, lip balm, and Bacter Band and say, I want to go home. When my husband walked out of our 15-year marriage, only to return a month later, the truth of the matter is that he came home not for me, but for the waffles. Given the bitter man who showed up at my door, Life on the outside must not have been all that and a bag of chips. After the heady rush of abandoning his tired, harpy wife subsided, the brutal reality of his middle-aged, non-007 life surely hit him like a sucker punch. Maybe the hot divorcee from the gym who told him his hair was cute, when push came to shove, didn't want to move into his overpriced bachelor pad after all. Or maybe the 21-year-old twigs dragged back from all the all-night raves seemed less edgy and bedazzling over coffee. Or maybe time with our kids whittled down to a half cut too deeply. Or maybe when he needed to blow his nose, there just wasn't an appropriate place to put his snot. Perhaps that sounds like a woman-scored conjecture. Perhaps my husband looked into our children's wet eyes, saw my DNA refracted back, and determined that our convertible family of four was something precious and worth fighting for. After all, history doesn't come cheap. After a year of ego-breaking joint counseling, it's still manly unclear what myth-busting constellation propelled my Icarus back home. But then it became painfully obviously just what drove him out of our marriage in the first place would not, could not go away. I was still me. No amount of reflective listening or positive spin or self-medication was going to change it. After 40-plus years, I'm pretty much formed as a human being. I wasn't going to get any smarter or more charming. Without surgical intervention, I wasn't going to get any prettier. I wasn't going to become less outspoken. My New Year's post certainly didn't help. And while I could try to be less inconsiderate or put out more, it would be a conscious and temporary effort. Plus, given the wounds of my public-private humiliation, my economy-sized lifetime emotional U-Haul had ballooned into a crazy caravan. Surely I was even less lovable now. In the end, I can make a beautiful home and raise beautiful children, but fundamentally, my best friend no longer believed me to be his faithful Kimisabi, and likely never would again, not really. Without his unconditional love, hearth and home felt altogether bankrupt. And that's why, after we both spent an exhausting year trying our damnedest, I worked up the courage to leave everything that formed my grown-up reality. As we put on a brave face and slogged through the mediation, the kids sensed that our family had fallen into hospice. The party line, Mommy and Daddy are working on becoming friends, held them until the tension in the house became unbearable. After school one snowy day over Rick Bayless' Dolce de Leche Coco, the kids pressed me hard, and unexpectedly, I veered dangerously off script. "Yes," I blurted, "Mommy and Daddy are getting divorced, but we are always your parents, and we will always love you," and in slow-mo, my two angels careened into a deep, dark hole, like a skin-suit pit from Silence of the Lambs. Because of my feelings, no ladder made by God or man could ever pull them back into childhood. And even more, I ruined hot chocolate forever. This moment from a woman who has suffered miscarriages, climbed glaciers, battled lupus and addiction, learned to walk again and survived two decades of Chicago winters has been by far the hardest thing I've ever endured. As legal maneuvering ground me into the dust, I heard my Uber Zen pal Tracy whisper, "You have your kids 70% of the time. Everything else is just stuff. Wish Enor well and let it go." So impulsively, I traded my fine house for better running shoes and an open door. Since my income as a writer, artist, activist, mom is virtually non-existent, my soon-to-be ex reluctantly agreed to co-sign a lease on a nearby apartment. For your information, by the time Comcast deems you a credit risk, there's no place to go but up. The very next day, taking on the chandelier and my clothes stuffed in the garbage bag, I teetered down the street to my new place like some kind of kooky Lakeshore Drive refugee. Well, I'll tell you, some well-meaning person of the news of my move and impending divorce, their face would scrunch into tortured concern until I learned to quickly follow it with, "But no worries, it's all okay." And then they'd smile and chime, "Congratulations." Inevitably, some overly intimate conversation would follow in which they'd reveal the details of their own torrid affair, hushed impotence, or prolonged Springer-esque misery. Not that I mind. It was soothing to know that my own marriage was, by all accounts, very good until suddenly it wasn't. Here's a little secret I don't tell them. 40 days and 40 nights into my new life, I'm deliriously proud of myself for leaving my marriage without some Ibsen rescue at play. Up until last year, I didn't know the difference between a 401k and a 5k, forgive me, Susie Orman, and I'm still not sure how I'm going to hang on to my pie-in-the-sky dreams and simultaneously put real food on those imaginary tables, but I'll figure it out. Hopefully, after the machinery of the state has run its ugly course, my husband and I will become friends again. For the kid's sake, fingers crossed. In the meantime, as he navigates his new, more authentic self, I've managed to rediscover my long-lost Charlie girl. In my Chapter 2 apartment, one block and a world away, I heeded my daughter's advice and ditched my stale designer beige for Jonathan Adler, fabulously electric blues, chocolate brown, and an orange so vibrant it almost pulsates. Riding here under my salvaged chandelier amidst funky thrift store finds and jaw-dropping art on loan from my gallery pal, Jennifer Norback, I can finally breathe. The place has a good vibe, but it's not about the stuff, although the unchallenged self-expression helps. In these groovy rooms of my own, I hear Sandberg's voice, "Nothing can harm you unless you turn yourself into a thing of harm. Nothing can harm you." Although my sage friend Lisa promised that we'd get to the other side, I never would have believed it. From my bedroom window, each morning I wake up to the dog licking my face and the sun rising over Lake Michigan. I'm alone, but less alone than I was before. On Mom's weeks, my kids, still blistered and angry, jump into my giant, pristine white bed with sleepy eyes, in spite of it all, kisses. We are healing, slowly. And then, like clockwork, the three of us stumble into our lemon meringue kitchen under the shimmering glitter of the disco ball and make waffles. And I think this article really expressed, you know, a lot of what women have to go through when they have to readjust their life. What do you think?
Absolutely. You have to, life changes. But that doesn't mean it's all for the bad. Life can change in many good ways. And I think those are the ones that are most successful, that look at it as a new chapter, a new part of their life. And in that new chapter and in that beginning, new beginning, they rediscover who they are.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, in life you never anticipate changes. And, you know, I think that's one thing we try to express to women, that when this happens, it's not the end of the world, although it certainly may feel like it at the time that you're going through it. But for sure, you know, it isn't the end of the world. And we see so many women successfully start over with new lives and in new relationships, you know, when they're ready. And, you know, one thing that I learned, you know, we just finished finishing up a new book of Straight Wives, Shattered Lives, Volume 2. And I'm really excited that that will be out shortly next month. And after putting together all these, you know, heartfelt stories by women from not only in this country, but also in England and Australia and Canada. And these stories were so heart-wrenching. But one thing I learned from reading all of these stories, Misty, our women have incredible strength, incredible inner strength.
Absolutely.
You know, they overcome tremendous barriers and battles. And, you know, so many of them that were in this, you know, book were in really, you know, destructive marriages.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these are all loving women who love their husbands, who love their marriages, who are planning to be together forever. And, you know, they just watched things fall apart. You know, they started out so strong, but they just started deteriorating as the husband, you know, sexuality became more defined, and he knew who he was, and then he's out there doing his thing. But, you know, I read a few of these stories, just broke my heart, about women who had sexually transmitted diseases, you know, because they were with men who had no consideration as far as, you know, protecting them from this. And just really devastating to have to read their stories. And we had Kay on our show a few weeks ago from the AIDS Society in California, and she was telling us on the show how, you know, she's had AIDS now for 21 years, or HIV now. But, you know, how that affects every aspect of your life. And here you are involved with somebody and have no clue that they're even gay. And the next thing you're finding out is not only aren't they gay, but they also infected you with HIV or syphilis or gonorrhea. You know, our women get infected with a lot of different things, not just HIV and AIDS. But I was just so glad that, you know, the women who are in this story, that they contributed this. And I was so inspired by their words to see the inner strength that you find when you have no choice.
Absolutely.
You know, because people could give up, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, the strength that you can find is unbelievable when you tap into it. You're much stronger than you think you are.
So if a woman would come to you in that situation, Missy, in your counseling and coaching, what do you tell her?
Well, it's always important for the woman to tell the story. I think the first few sessions, it's so important in healing in and of itself to share a story with someone that you know that understands, to share a story with someone that you know that gets your situation. So that's so important. And it's also important for me as a coach to remind that person that, you know, you can survive this, you will survive this, and you are surviving this. And once you get through that survival part, then you start, you know, picking up the tempo a bit when they're ready. And that's when you start rediscovering yourself, rediscovering who you are, redefining who you are. Because so often when you're in a marriage, you lose who you are. Because women, we really define ourselves by the relationships we're in. And when we define ourselves as a wife, and we're defining ourselves as a wife to a gay husband, we're not defining ourselves authentically because the gay husband wasn't living an authentic life. So, you know, it just sort of comes the facade comes tumbling down. So you have to go through a period of rediscovery. So there's several things. You know, that's sort of the basics, and that's where you start out. You know, coaching is always about asking the right questions because you go on this journey with this person attempting to heal, and you help them discover the ways to help them heal instead of telling someone what to do. And that's the way I practice my therapy as well. I don't believe it's good to tell someone what they should do. However, when it comes to this type of situation, I will tell the women, you will survive this. This feels awful, but you will survive this. And, you know, there's comfort in knowing that because the grief pain is so intense. You feel like you may not survive it. So just by knowing,
offer hope. I tell women you have to make a plan. You know, if you have a plan, then you have goals and ways to get there. And it doesn't mean you have to be in a rush or hurry to get there, but you just have to have the plan to get there. And sometimes you get backtracked on your road and your journey. Sometimes you fall down, but you can get up again. You know, there's no smooth continuum of gay husband recovery. It's not like, okay, today I found out, and in 6 months from now I'm going to go through all the steps and I'm going to be cured. You know, it's never quite that simple, right, Misty?
No, it's not that black and white. That's why it's so important to get a professional to help guide you through this. I have, women sometimes get through the grief process fairly early, and then some women rush themselves through it, and then they come back often, you know. And also, I have some women that just come back every now and then because the process is different a year versus 2 years out. Sometimes they find themselves getting stuck 2 years out thinking, you know, I'm still thinking about the marriage I have a lot. What do I do? I feel like I'm stuck. I feel like I'm stuck in this grief. And a lot of times when the straight wife contacts me again, that person has they're divorced, and a lot of times the ex-husband is dating again. So, you know, that's usually another setback for the ex-wife because sometimes, unfortunately, they're still holding on to hope that the husband's not gay and they'll still get together. So, you know, it just depends on each person, you know, what their healing journey is. And by the first couple phone calls, you can usually, and not that I can predict it, but you can usually tell when someone's motivated to move forward, and when someone needs to sit and just tell their story over for a while, that some people need that too. So it all depends where you're at in your story and what's going on in your life and how unique your situation is, because these stories can be even more complicated than some of the other stories. So it really depends what else going on in the marriage and in the life.
Well, that's so true. But the important thing is to get on the road, get onto the road of healing and recovery.
Absolutely.
And so if you're interested in Misty's free seminar, you'll never have a better opportunity. It's this Saturday coming up, August 20th. And if you are interested and you would like to join in, you can be anonymous. Nobody has to know your real name.
Absolutely.
You'll meet other women who have traveled your road or who are in the process of traveling it. You can write to Misty at Misty Lynn Hall. That's MistyLynnHall. Is there an E at the end of Lynn?
No, HALL at AOL.com.
Okay, Misty Lynn Hall. Or write to me at BonK at AOL, and I'll send you Misty's email address. So, with that, Misty, I want to wish you great luck next Saturday, next Sunday night. You can tell us all about it.
I certainly will.
I just want to mention also for our women, I have my annual get-together coming up September 24th. We're only about 7 weeks away. And
wow.
It's going to be a really big event because not only are we having our healing weekend, but we're also celebrating my 60th birthday. So all of our support group members will be joining me for a really interesting evening of fun, entertainment, and great food that's being catered. And you will be my guest for my birthday as part of this weekend. And also every person who's coming to the event will also be receiving the new book, Straight Wives, Shattered Lives, Volume 2, which will be out by that time. So we're going to have a wonderful weekend together of sharing, of healing, of stories, of new friends, new friendships, and of counseling strategies on how to get past things and activities. So if you're interested, please write to me at bonk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to get you set up with the information. So, Misty, we've had a wonderful Sunday night. We want to send love to all of our friends from our support group who listen to our show, not only in this country, but also all over the world. And in sometime in late September, early October, we're going to have a guest here from Australia. There's a Straight Spouse Network group in Australia. It's a wonderful group. And the leader of the group, Hannah, is going to be in town, at the Straight Spouse Network convention that they have every year in Florida. And she's going to be our guest on the show that night to talk about her group in Australia, hoping to unite some of our, Australian sisters who are in pain with her group there. So we'll be having her as our guest, Hannah, at the end of September. So I think we have some interesting guests that will be coming up in the next few weeks. So just stay tuned in. And if you have any questions or comments, feel free to write to me at bonk@aol.com. Well, Misty, have a wonderful week.
You as well.
And you can say your goodnight.
Yeah, goodnight and love to all.
Same here. Have a wonderful week, and we'll be back with you next Sunday. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.